I mean, think about it. We will happily spend hours at the gym training our bodies, right? We track our steps, monitor our protein intake.
I'll optimize our sleep schedules down to the minute.
Exactly. But when it comes to our minds, we leave our attention to rot on an algorithmic treadmill.
It's pretty wild when you actually step back and look at it.
Right. We just operate under this passive assumption that however we're thinking right now is simply, how we are, as if cognitive capability is just this fixed trait we're stuck with for life.
Yeah, and that's a dangerous assumption.
It really is. So, the mission of this deep dive today is to completely shatter that assumption entirely. We are uncovering the hidden biological and environmental forces making our thinking incredibly rigid. Often, actually, especially when we consider ourselves highly
Fuck,
intelligent.
it's such a fascinating paradox.
Totally. And we're going to explore the specific mechanics of how to actively train for cognitive agility.
And honestly, it is arguably the single most critical capability to develop in the current era. I mean, modern life places an extraordinary, frankly, unprecedented pressure on human attention.
Yeah, to help us unpack all of this, we've got a really compelling stack of sources today. We are diving into a comprehensive May 2026 white paper by A.G. Wilkins. It's titled Cognitive Agility.
Which is brilliant, by the way.
It is, and we're pairing that with some practical materials from a remarkably simple mental training service called Clarity Cycle.
Right. And, the core scientific premise we're exploring from all this research is neuroplasticity.
Which feels like one of those terms that gets thrown around a lot.
Oh, constantly. We often treat neuroplasticity like this motivational buzzword, right? Like, oh, I'm going to rewire my brain to learn a new language. But at its core, it is the strict biological reality that your brain physically adapts to whatever it repeatedly does.
So it's not just about learning new tricks.
No, not at all. If your daily routine involves fragmented, distracted, and highly reactive thinking, your brain literally thickens the neural pathways for distraction.
Right, really?
Yeah, you don't just experience distraction, you biologically wire yourself to become an expert at being distracted.
Wow. Okay, well, the Wilkins paper makes it clear that before we can fix our thinking, we really have to look under the hood at why human cognition gets so stuck in the first place. And it all traces back to the brain's relentless biological mandate for efficiency, right?
Exactly. Because the human brain is just a massive energy consumer. I mean, despite being only about 2% of our body weight, it burns around 20% of our daily caloric intake.
That is just a massive amount of energy.
It is. So to manage that massive metabolic load, the brain is constantly searching for computational shortcuts. It looks for patterns, establishes habits.
Builds those stable routines.
Right. So it can just drop conscious processing and conserve energy. And we absolutely rely on this. If we had to consciously process every single photon of light and make a deliberate, agonizing decision about every micro movement we make just to walk down the street,
We would be completely
we
paralyzed.
wouldn't even be able to function.
But the Wilkins paper points out the massive hidden cost to that biological efficiency. Over time, those energy-saving shortcuts, they harden into deep cognitive rigidity.
Yes, they really do.
We basically stop examining our assumptions about the world because examining them burns energy. So we just recycle familiar interpretations of reality. And the dangerous part is that we mistake that mere repetition for objective truth.
And that rigidity then becomes deeply intertwined with our sense of self. The source material spends significant time on how identity acts as a structural cognitive filter.
And we usually think of identity in obvious terms, like our political affiliations or job titles.
Sure, but it also includes our unspoken personal narratives, our perceived social status, and our group belonging. The brain literally treats these identity structures like load-bearing walls.
So this filter mechanically dictates what information you even allow yourself to notice.
Exactly, what you unconsciously ignore, and crucially, what data the brain processes as a literal threat.
Which totally explains a phenomenon we see every single day. I mean, two people can look at the exact same piece of statistical data, but they experience two completely different realities.
Because that data is being forced through completely different identity filters.
Right. We defend our beliefs not because we have verified they're objectively true, but because abandoning them would threaten our social belonging and our internal psychological coherence. The brain reacts to a conflicting opinion as if it were a physical predator.
Which introduces one of the most counterintuitive findings in the Wilkins paper, the curse of expertise and high intelligence.
Okay, let's unpack this. I've noticed this pattern in professional settings where highly credentialed people aren't necessarily better at finding the truth. They are just better at arguing why they were right all along. It seems like they, I don't know, weaponize their expansive vocabulary just to protect their ego.
Wait, so being smart can actually make you more closed-minded. So a person's genius is actually their downfall because they are too good at defending their own ego.
What's fascinating here is the psychological distinction between genuine truth-seeking and identity preservation. High intelligence does not automatically reduce cognitive bias.
It doesn't.
No. In many cases, it simply makes that bias far more articulate. A highly intelligent person possesses the processing power to construct incredibly sophisticated rationalizations for why their pre-existing belief is the correct one.
So they just build a stronger fortress around their opinion.
Exactly. The sheer ability to win an argument or logically defend a position gets mistaken for the ability to honestly examine it. Because they can intellectually outmaneuver someone who challenges them, they never actually experience the friction required to change their own mind. Their genius becomes the very thing that traps them in a silo.
And in modern environments that heavily reward expertise and academic credentials, well, the psychological cost of admitting you are wrong is immense. You feel you are risking your hard-earned authority.
So what does true cognitive flexibility actually look like, then?
True cognitive flexibility, as Wilkins defines it, is a rare ability to hold a strong conviction while remaining genuinely open to revision. It is the capacity to hold beliefs without being psychologically trapped inside them.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, a cognitively agile mind can say, I may be completely wrong about this, without triggering a biological threat response that their entire identity is collapsing.
That makes so much sense. But if our internal biology is already working overtime to trap us in these rigid energy-saving patterns, the external modern environment is actively throwing gasoline on the fire. Our attention isn't something we are intentionally directing anymore. It is being captured from the outside.
The modern digital environment isn't just a passive backdrop. It is an aggressively engineered landscape, actively competing for your cognitive bandwidth. Platforms utilize variable reward schedules, emotional stimulation, outrage.
Constant novelty.
Right, constant novelty to bypass your conscious filter and grab your attention at the brainstem level.
The result is that our daily thinking shifts away from intentional processing and just defaults to reactive automaticity. The white paper highlights everyday examples of this mechanism in action.
Yeah, like having a visceral emotional reaction to a headline before you've even clicked on the article to reflect on its contents.
Or the habit of completing someone else's sentence in your head while they're talking, completely blocking your ability to actually listen to the nuance of what they're saying.
Or just impulsively checking your phone. That automaticity actively degrades sustained focus and cognitive coherence.
Because the gap between an external event happening and your reaction to it shrinks to basically zero.
Exactly. You are no longer responding to the reality in front of you. You are merely executing a pre-programmed, learned interpretation of reality.
It's like when you're driving a familiar route and suddenly realize you're home without remembering the drive. But we're doing that with our entire lives, just sleepwalking through conversations and decisions.
And the antidote to that sleepwalking is metacognition. Wilkins places it right at the center of the framework.
Metacognition, so thinking about thinking.
Right. It's the mechanical ability to observe your own thought processes as they are happening. Between a stimulus occurring and your biological reaction to it, there's a microscopic gap. That gap is where human awareness begins.
So before anyone can ever hope to expand their thinking or solve complex problems, they must first develop the capacity to notice where their attention is currently anchored.
You have to realize you're riding in the passenger seat before you can reach over and grab the steering wheel.
Once we spot that we are stuck on autopilot, the question becomes how we actually break out and expand the way we process information. The paper breaks down the different modes of cognition, starting with the tension between convergent and divergent thought.
We definitely need both. But our systems heavily bias one over the other.
So convergent thinking, that's the more analytical one.
Yes, convergent thinking is purely analytical and reductive. It takes a wide array of information and narrows it down to locate a single specific correct answer. It optimizes for precision, efficiency, and certainty.
Like structural engineering or procedural tasks.
Or mathematics, exactly. And our modern education and corporate systems aggressively condition us to value this mode above all others. We are trained from childhood to find the one correct answer and eliminate all ambiguity.
While divergent thinking is the exact opposite, It expands possibilities rather than narrowing them. It explores alternative interpretations, searches for unusual connections between completely unrelated things.
It operates in the realm of high-level strategy and complex problem-solving. Education rewards convergent thinking because it is easy to grade, but real-world breakthroughs universally require divergent thinking.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If convergent thinking is the laser beam and divergent is the floodlight, are most of us just stuck in laser mode because our jobs demand we always have the correct answer ready?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that immense pressure to always possess the correct answer drives us directly into what the paper terms single-lens thinking.
Right.
We undergo years of training to view the complexity of reality through one dominant professional framework. The economist views every societal issue purely as an incentive problem. The psychologist views the exact same issue entirely as behavioral conditioning.
Every specialized framework illuminates something highly useful, but it fundamentally obscures everything outside its borders. Single-lens thinking dangerously oversimplifies a complex reality.
Which is why the Wilkins paper offers a specific antidote to this called multi-lens or polymathic thinking.
And that doesn't mean you have to be a genius at six different professions.
I know, not at all. The mechanism relies on fluid intelligence and pattern transfer. It's the ability to recognize an underlying structural pattern in one domain and successfully map it onto a completely different domain.
Like the example in the paper of a financial trader who spends years recognizing behavioral panic patterns in the stock market and then successfully applies that exact same framework to predict viral outrage trends on social media.
Or a military strategist taking battlefield supply line concepts and mapping them onto corporate logistics. Complex, modern problems rarely confine themselves to neat, single-domain boxes.
So true. I mean, public health isn't just a biological problem. It's an economic problem, a behavioral psychology problem, an urban planning problem all at once.
Exactly. And to process that reality, the white paper strongly advocates for the revival of Socratic dialogue.
Socratic dialogue. Yeah. So not a debate where you just try to defeat your opponent.
Right. It uses rigorous questioning to actively open up cognitive space and disarm the ego's threat detection system by asking, what specific assumptions am I making here? Or what exact evidence would prove my current belief wrong? The focus shifts away from defending an identity toward examining the structural integrity of the thought itself.
Which dramatically increases a person's tolerance for ambiguity. And when you can successfully balance that kind of high-level challenge with your actual skill level, you drop into what the paper calls flow state.
The mechanism there is fascinating. Flow is described as high-bandwidth thinking, where internal friction plummets.
Your ideas connect rapidly because that rigid, conscious over-control we normally exert over our thoughts is temporarily reduced.
Flow is often discussed in mystical terms, but structurally, it is a highly measurable cognitive state of deep attentional coherence. Transient hypofrontality occurs, meaning the inner critic goes quiet.
However, constant environmental interruption violently fragments your cognition before you can ever sink into that state.
Yes. You physically cannot access high bandwidth flow if your attention is constantly being shattered by algorithmic notifications and reactive impulses.
So if our attention is this fractured and high bandwidth flow states are so neurologically fragile, how does someone actually fix this on a random Tuesday morning without quitting their job and moving to a monastery?
Well, the paper introduces the mechanism of cognitive friction. Growth demands constructive discomfort.
Just as biological muscles require the friction of physical resistance to tear and rebuild stronger.
Exactly. Neural pathways require cognitive friction to expand. If a mental exercise feels too easy, you're simply driving a deeper groove into your existing neural pathways. You must engage in deliberate perspective shifting.
Like actively sitting down and attempting to construct a structurally sound argument for the exact opposite side of your own deeply held belief.
Because the brain interprets uncertainty as a physical threat, you have to deliberately train the nervous system to tolerate that friction without initiating a fight-or-flight shutdown.
And one of the most effective tools the paper highlights for creating that constructive friction is the physical externalization of thought, right?
Yes. The act of writing out an argument or having a long-form dialogue literally forces your cognition to slow down.
When you attempt to write a complex idea out on paper, the requirement to sequence your logic linearly immediately exposes the vague leaps and emotional biases you were masking.
Thoughts that feel incredibly profound and coherent while bouncing around the echo chamber of your own head suddenly look remarkably flimsy when forced into a structured paragraph. Writing strips away the illusion of understanding. It demands precision and forces you to confront the actual structural integrity of your reasoning.
Theory is great, but to move to daily application, the sources included materials from that service called Clarity Cycle. It's a mental training tool that costs about £2 a month, and the methodology is incredibly lo-fi.
Yeah, they intentionally strip away every modern engagement tactic.
No daily streaks, no progress dashboards, no push notifications reminding you to log in, and thankfully, zero guru energy.
It is a purely mechanical system designed to train meta-awareness in just 5 minutes a day. The underlying architecture of the training is based on a very specific philosophy. Minuscule daily practice yields massive compounding neurological effects over time.
Huh. I have to admit, when I first reviewed the example drill for day 3, which they called drift detection, I laughed. The instructions simply tell you to sit in a normal chair for 5 minutes. Every single time your mind wanders away from the present moment, you are instructed to say the word drift internally.
No instruction to suppress the thoughts or clear your mind, just to detect the wandering.
Right. And my immediate arrogant reaction was, 5 minutes, come on, I can easily focus for 5 minutes. But then my eyes dropped to the very first line of the Clarity Cycle material, which read, most people think they can consciously focus for 5 minutes. Most people are wrong.
This raises an important question about how poorly we calibrate our own self-awareness. We drastically overestimate the amount of conscious executive control we wield over our own minds.
We really do.
When you actually sit in silence and attempt to observe the mechanics of your attention, you're confronted with how immediately, violently, and compulsively it gets hijacked by stray anxieties, memory loops, or physical impulses to check a device.
So the structural goal of the drift detection drill is not to force the brain into a state of perfect, unbroken concentration.
No. The goal is simply to decrease the latency period between the mind wandering and you noticing that it wandered.
It's not about pretending you'll never lose focus again. It's about training the mechanism of catching yourself losing focus. You are actively widening that tiny gap between stimulus and reaction so you actually have time to make a choice.
The objective of this type of training is never to achieve a state of constant, optimized peak performance. Pursuing relentless optimization is biologically exhausting and completely unsustainable.
Right.
The realistic goal is a gradual neurological shift away from rigid, unconscious reactivity. By repeatedly practicing the act of noticing where your attention is anchored, you physically strengthen the metacognitive networks in the prefrontal cortex. Over time, you become measurably less controlled by external engineering and more capable of intentional direction.
So what does this all mean for the listener navigating their actual life today? To bring all this theory and practice into sharp focus, the Wilkins white paper includes an appendix detailing exactly how cognitive agility alters everyday reality.
It really drives home the point that intelligence isn't a fixed baseline. It is a highly malleable mechanism we must intentionally maintain.
The real-world applications demonstrate why this is foundational to every role we play. Like, consider the daily reality of a parent.
Parents operate under immense chronic cognitive and emotional loads. That persistent stress and physical fatigue naturally drive the brain to default to its most automatic, deeply grooved reactions.
But with even a small baseline of attention training and reflective awareness, a parent develops the metacognitive capacity to pause for half a second before reacting to a screaming child.
In that microscopic pause, they can recognize a flawed behavioral pattern they inherited from their own childhood and consciously choose to model emotional regulation instead. A microscopic shift in cognitive flexibility in that singular moment can alter the trajectory of family dynamics for generations.
Wow. And the same mechanism applies to a startup founder. Founders typically achieve initial success because they possess incredibly strong, uncompromising conviction about their product.
But as the market evolves and external data shifts, that very same conviction hardens into fatal rigidity.
Right. A founder equipped with cognitive flexibility possesses the capacity to look at hostile market data and update their outdated assumptions without their amygdala processing the pivot as a devastating attack on their personal ego.
Or consider the modern student. If an education system strictly relies on convergent thinking, forcing them to memorize the precise, correct answers for standardized tests, They're being trained for a world that no longer exists.
Cognitive flexibility shifts their capability toward independent reasoning, evaluating conflicting sources of information, and applying pattern recognition across different disciplines.
That is the only capability that will actually hold value long term.
So cognitive agility is literally the operating system running underneath every single decision we make.
Absolutely. And I want to leave you with a structural reality drawn directly from the core of Wilkins' research. Your biological mind is relentlessly adapting to your surrounding environment every single second of the day, regardless of whether you consciously consent to it or not.
It's always active.
Always. If neuroplasticity is always active running in the background of your life, you have to ask yourself, what exactly is your current default daily environment secretly training your brain to become?
That is the ultimate metric, isn't it? If you are not actively programming your own attention, you can guarantee that a highly optimized algorithm is programming it for you. We need to stop treating our brains like static hardware that never requires maintenance. It is time to step off the algorithmic treadmill. Stay curious, embrace a little cognitive friction today, and keep questioning your own assumptions. Thanks for exploring the mechanics of the mind with us on this deep dive.